Max Basics are the result of search engine optimization and other techniques we use to identify an answer to the question, what are taxpayers often looking for the most but have the hardest trouble finding when it comes to information about their government? One is, who really pays taxes in the United States? What's the distribution of the income tax burden? We often hear the poor pay nothing, the rich pay a lot, or vice versa. Well, there is data that you can use to answer that question in a factual way. Now, what you do with that politically, well, that's up to you, but we can present that data in a way that people can understand the distribution of federal income tax burdens in the United States and other types of tax burdens at the state level or other taxes like payroll taxes at the federal level.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Pete Sepp, president of the National Taxpayers Union, or NTU. Pete, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Pete, tell us about NTU.
We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan citizen organization founded all the way back in 1969. Our mission is to work for simpler, fairer, and lower taxes, less wasteful government spending, more accountability from public officials, and more respect for taxpayer rights. We not only work at the federal level, but state and local level, and we are even part of an international consortium of sister and brother taxpayer groups around the world doing the same thing.
Pete, 1969 is an interesting year. There was a lot happening in the country, but why that year? What's the origin story of NTU?
That was indeed the year of our founding, and the fellow who did it was James Dale Davidson, a graduate student at the time who had just finished working for Richard Nixon's presidential campaign, and he thought to himself, you know, Republicans talk a good game about protecting taxpayers' interests, but I saw a lot of cases where they weren't, and there must be some kind of organization that's devoted only to taxpayers' interests, not Democrat interests, not Republican interests, just taxpayers' interests. He was looking for something like Ralph Nader's organization, Nader's Raiders, but for taxpayers.
Oh.
And so this idea came to him in DuPont Circle while he was walking around here in Washington, D.C., and he said to himself, I'm going to call up an organization and join them. And so he looked in the yellow pages and the white pages under various entries like advocacy, citizen group, and in the white pages, he looked under taxpayers, so forth and so on. And he said, there's nothing like this. So I guess it's up to me to start one. We're going to have something called the National Taxpayers Union, a union for taxpayers. And so right there in a phone booth, they used to have those things.
Yes.
In 1969 on DuPont Circle, a National Taxpayers Union was born.
What a great origin story. So I think about how my business was a member of the Alexandria Chamber of Commerce. At one point, we were members of the National Federation for Independent Business. So you represent taxpayers, individuals, and corporations?
Individuals, small businesses, large businesses, anyone who pays taxes.
Okay, so are you a membership organization? How are you funded? How does one affiliate with NTU?
Yes, we are a membership organization. We welcome taxpayers from all walks of life who share our goals and our mission, our vision. People can join us. We have a website where they can find out more information. Here comes the promo, ntu.org. But seriously, the point of NTU and its sister organization, NTU Foundation, like our founder, Jim Davidson, is to do things that others aren't. And that has informed our mission for years. Many people probably realize this in the association world, that there is literally an association for everything.
Yes.
You can think of almost any business, any occupation, any disease, any product, anything. There's an association for it. The taxpayer and fiscal policy space is no exception. It is actually quite crowded. If you were to look at the federal and state levels alone here in the U.S., there's easily a couple hundred of them involved in one way or another in fiscal policy. And so instead of saying to ourselves, how do we compete with other organizations, we say, how do we complement our fiscal policy movement by doing things that others aren't?
Okay, so since there are a jillion of these other organizations focused on tax policy, for example, how do you determine your niche?
Yeah, it's not easy. Some of it is simply word of mouth. We might be at a policy conference with a number of our peers and ask, say, what's the big hole that we're not filling as a movement right now? You can get a variety of answers. The internet has made things a whole lot easier. You can easily gather information about issues and who's working on them or who's not working on them. And you can almost form a map of uncharted territory for fiscal policy that way. Sometimes it's a question of where. In other words, no one has taken this direction before. Other times it's a question of when. Nobody's been down this road for 10, 20, 30 years. Why is that? Is it because it's a dead end? Or it's because perhaps people just haven't wanted to travel it for one reason or another? That's just kind of the issue mining process. But then there's also the why. It could very well be that a given issue or a given set of issues is just too much expenditure of human and financial capital to try and make a difference on. We've discovered that as well as we try and do our mapping process. And so all three of those kind of come together sometimes, and we say, aha, we think we have an idea here, so let's develop it, and then we'll test it out in the marketplace among our peers, ask them, hey, do you think this is something useful, and do you know if anybody else is doing it? So it's kind of a circular process. We ask, who do you think's not doing something? Then we do research, then we develop a plan, and then we come back. And sometimes the answer is, oh, yeah, that. I know an organization that's engaged in it. Okay, maybe they're not doing it well enough, and we can form an alliance with them. Or maybe it's not being done at all.
So if it's an issue where others are working, you're going to form alliances. But if it's an issue that's maybe orphaned, you'll do something about it. Give us an example of an orphaned tax issue that you decided to take on and why.
One of the more important but very difficult issues to work on is reform of the Internal Revenue Service. In other words, we often think of tax rates, tax bases, what types of credits and deductions people ought to be able to take. But we rarely consider how all of those laws are administered and what is the impact of that administration on taxpayers. How complex are all of the forms? What happens when you get audited by the IRS? What are your rights? Can you go to court with the IRS and have any hope of being on kind of an even footing with the government? All of those questions were basically ones that the fiscal policy movement didn't much want to mess with. They thought, well, this is the province of accountants or tax lawyers, or maybe we don't want to open up a can of worms with the IRS and have them come after us.
But Pete, you as an organization decided that IRS reform was important.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because of waste, mismanagement?
It's because it's a basic human rights issue that was ignored in the human rights space. When you think of human rights, and this is going back in our history to the late 1980s when I first came to the organization, you tend to think of the abuse of governments imprisoning people unjustly or not respecting their reproductive rights or their freedom of speech rights. You think of countries being invaded by other countries and their rights being abused in that way. We don't often think of taxpayers having rights at the hands of their government, and they should, because a government tax collection agency probably has as much power as a military does to ruin their citizens' lives. You know, they can search your records without a warrant. They can accuse you of...
They can seize property.
That's right. And you have to prove your own innocence rather than the government has to prove its case against you when it comes to taxes. That's a complicated matter. It's how our system is set up. But because it's set up that way, we need to have special safeguards for taxpayer rights, giving them opportunities to appeal decisions by the IRS in a neutral forum, making sure that seizures of property, for example, are handled very, very delicately and properly within the law, and that certain amounts of money and property are exempt from those kinds of things, so that every taxpayer has the right to remain self-supporting in the middle of a tax collection proceeding. Very little of that was ever regarded as a human rights or civil liberties issue until we decided, yeah, we have to work on this. And so that's when we built a coalition beginning in the mid-1980s, highlighting abuses that taxpayers were reporting to us and the media and their members of Congress, and saying, we need legislative reforms to establish a more even playing field between taxpayers and their government when there are disputes. And so our coalition included organizations like National Council of La Raza. It included, at one point, American Civil Liberties Union. It included conservative organizations, other left-wing organizations, who were all concerned over this notion that nobody was paying attention to a pretty big civil rights issue. I have to tell you, one of the greatest honors that I had was testifying before Congress in 2019 on what was called the Taxpayer First Act, one of several IRS reform bills that has occurred over the years. And the hearing was being co-chaired by the late John Lewis, the Democratic civil rights activist from Georgia.
Right. The good trouble guy.
Yeah. And you think to yourself, wow, to have somebody of his stature recognize the issue of taxpayer rights after all he had been through was really something. It's incredible.
Wow. Well, I am glad that you were looking out for the rights of taxpayers. Pete, it's clear that we have a lot to talk about when it comes to NTU, but I want to turn to your journey for a second. You've been at NTU for 37 years. How did you get to become president? And that's quite the journey.
Yeah. I got to become president almost the same way that our founder became the founder of NTU. It was almost purely by happenstance. I had graduated college with a degree in history and political science and was looking for a job in Washington. I had thought about going into the national security sector or maybe Congress. And back then, there was no internet. I don't even know if fax machines were common at that point. But I decided, well, I have to systematize my search for a job. And so what I did was every piece of mail I received from various conservative organizations asking me for money, because I subscribe to a lot of magazines. That's how they get your name.
Right. There's all this sharing of lists, right?
Yeah, that's how they started soliciting you back then. And so I took all those letters I got, copied their addresses, sent every one of them my resume and a cover letter expressing interest in working for them. And it was NTU who decided to call me, our executive vice president.
Wow.
I was making brownies and watching the old soap opera Dynasty.
Wow. I remember Dynasty, right?
And got the phone call, say, we have a very basic position open here. It'd just be answering phones, but if you'd like to fly to Washington and learn more about it, we can do that. And I did.
Wow.
And I was lucky enough to land the job as receptionist for National Taxpayers Union on April 18th, 1988.
And then you just kept moving up.
Yeah, I was very fortunate in that the organization was entrepreneurial enough to allow that. One of the first things I did was I read every single edition of our newsletter monthly, Dollars and Cents, going back to 1969 to start figuring out the history of the organization. I grabbed and edited everything I possibly could gladly. It was discovered I had a pretty decent editing eye, a decent voice. My big break came in 1989 when my boss was booked on two radio shows at once, and I was walking from my receptionist desk into his office. He hands me the phone and says, here, talk to this radio station in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania for the next hour on Congress's pay. And that was off to the races.
And because you had done all this reading, even though you were a pretty junior staff person, you were the right person at the right time, and you did a fantastic job, and they said, who are you?
That's right.
Wow.
I gradually moved up, mostly through communications for the first 10 or so years of my career, then into policy a little more, learning how to become a lobbyist, then as executive vice president, taking on some of the ministerial and managerial duties of the organization. And so I like to joke that they just kept making the mistake of promoting me, but in some ways, chance did have a lot to do with it.
Pete, how long have you been president?
I have been president since 2014.
Okay, 11 years.
Yes.
How do you maintain the passion for the organization and the issues after 37 years? What do you do as the leader to keep it fresh and exciting?
I think part of it is learning the causes in which I particularly believe in and try to specialize in every day. I like to think of myself as a working president. That's not an insult to anyone as if there's a non-working president, but by that I mean I actually try to engage directly in some of the issues we work on. I don't have a lot of time, so I have to be very careful with that, because a CEO's duty is something else we're going to talk about here.
Yes.
But IRS reform remains a big passion because I believe in human rights, and I've seen people suffer at the hands of their government as taxpayers. That job is never done. The bureaucracy always pushes back at reform. We've done five separate legislative reform packages, and the job's still not done. So, in a way, there are issues like that for everybody here that simply pull them along as they remain convinced that they're making a difference. It's not as if we need to find some new and exciting thing to do every day. it just happens. Because when you're in Washington, D.C., there are issues on taxes, spending, debt, government administration evolving every single day. And it's more a matter of trying to limit your focus to where you can do the most good than searching around and thinking there's nothing here.
Well, it sounds like every day you feel like you're making a difference, and that's what keeps you there. But let me ask you a question. During the prep, you said, Joanna, presidents need to focus on the four M's.
Yeah.
Tell us about the four M's. I think this is a key to you being a successful president at NTU.
Yeah, the four M's are very easy to remember. Money, 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 and money.
I'll remember that from now on.
I simply believe, and yes, this may ruffle a few feathers or whatever, that if you are not spending 80% of your time as a CEO, at least 80%, raising money, budgeting money, overseeing the expenditure of money, and managing money to grow it for the future, you're not doing your job. The other 20% can be directly participating in lobbying campaigns, managing staff. It can involve all sorts of things, including setting the vision and the mission for the organization. But 80% of it, at least, has got to be those four M's. Otherwise, you're not doing the job that your employees need you to do. Only you can do those things.
You know, you make a good point. There are certain things that only the president can do, and often at the highest level, you're bringing in the money and making sure that it's spent well. Well, let me ask you another question. Washingtonian Magazine just named NTU one of the 18 best places to work. Congratulations. What's the secret sauce here?
Yeah, I was frankly surprised. This is apparently a process where they have a company, Washingtonian hires, and they examine a bunch of factors like benefit packages and whatnot, and whether they are above or below the median in Washington, D.C., and they get surveys from employees. And, you know, the thing I read in there about what our employees say, I'll quote it, "Everyone is on board with the mission, so there are no big egos and no inner office politics. It's a good team atmosphere. There's a flexible work schedule and entrepreneurship is encouraged." And I think to myself,
wow.
Once again, talk about making the mistake of promoting me. I guess we made the mistake somehow and stumbled into good morale and management. It was not necessarily a thought out plan. It was simply grinding things out every day and saying, well, looks like the retirement plan is something we ought to be able to work on. Let's pick that for the next 6 months, see what better benefits we can offer while still paying attention to one of those M's in the money equation.
Yeah, yeah.
Other things you just practice every day. Since there are so many issues we can work on and we actually have to focus on a few where we can make a difference on a daily basis, we have discussions among our teams about evolving legislation or court cases or whatever. And everyone is free to bring those ideas forward. There's no ridicule, no penalty for doing it. And they can bring it all the way up to me if they want. There's only 24 of us here, and I'll hear about it anyway. So why not?
Well, Pete, congratulations. That's really high praise, calling NTU a place where you can be entrepreneurial and where there are no egos. That is amazing.
It's hard.
I bet. Let's turn to NTU. Because you're thriving as an organization, you're kind of in the thick of it, right? Because the big, beautiful bill just passed. We're looking at lots of spending. We're looking at big deficits. We're looking at a Congress that's really gridlocked. How do you navigate the politics of it all when you advocate on behalf of the taxpayers? You also say that you're center-right, and yet you're in coalitions with very liberal groups. How are you building these alliances? What are a couple secrets here?
I think part of it is to be very humble, to approach people as your peers, never to look down on their activities just because their philosophy differs from yours. You know, one of the things that I like to do is to read the opinion and editorial sections of hard left newspapers, find one whose author I might vehemently disagree with, and then try to take them to lunch.
Ah, and that's rare these days, I think.
And it's not to sing kumbaya with them. It is tactical in nature in that there's always at least one issue we can agree on. And if you can help out a person and break a logjam on an issue they've been working on because they can't look beyond their circle of allies and reach out, well, the favor can be returned later.
Well, Pete, how do you get them to say yes? Because I think we feel so divided right now. I mean, I hear friends, you know, on social saying, I'm blocking those people. I don't even want to hear their voices, which means you don't hear what the other side is saying. So how do you get them to come to lunch with you even?
Oh, I get plenty of turndowns.
Yeah.
It's far from a 500 batting average. I would say maybe a 1 in 4.
That's pretty good.
And that's fine. It only costs me an email and 15 minutes of reading time from one of their op-eds. And I figure if they say no, I've educated myself about an organization's position on something. So if I ever encounter them in the future, I'm already a step ahead of their thinking. So good. That's fine by me. And, you know, ultimately, I don't expect long-lasting friendships, but I do hope for relationships that are built on respect. And just maybe we can work on common legislation together. And the maybe happens more often than one would think.
And I bet, Pete, that just the act of sharing a meal means that it's harder to demonize each other.
Yeah.
Because you are now people.
That's right.
And not an issue and not a piece of paper and not a position.
That's right. I mean, I recently had a stint with someone on C-SPAN, the public interest and public affairs cable channel. We were able to just chat for 15 minutes before the broadcast about where we were from and all. That diffused matters a lot. And we had a much more frank discussion where we exchanged views with the host and the callers and the like, but it didn't descend into that snarling narrative.
Right, right.
That you see and hear on TV a lot. You can be strident in your position and disagree. That used to be what politics was about. I still think it is in a lot of places. I mean, groups like C4, social welfare organizations that actually have to advocate for legislation, your members should be leaving you if you don't form alliances and get bills passed that are imperfect, sometimes far from perfect, but move the ball forward. I mean, if you're just sitting there with your arms folded, waiting for an election cycle to come your way, people shouldn't be joining your outfit.
Ah. Well, let's turn to something different. You've got something called the NTU Foundation, which is a separate organization. That's a C3. You're a C4. And the foundation puts out something called Tax Basics. They're on the website. They're wonderful. Talk to us about them.
Yeah, Tax Basics are the result of search engine optimization and other techniques we use to identify an answer to the question, what are taxpayers often looking for the most but have the hardest trouble finding when it comes to information about their government? One is, who really pays taxes in the United States? What's the distribution of the income tax burden? We often hear the poor pay nothing, the rich pay a lot, or vice versa.
Right.
Well, there is data that you can use to answer that question in a factual way. Now, what you do with that politically, well, that's up to you. But we can present that data in a way that people can understand the distribution of federal income tax burdens in the United States and other types of tax burdens at the state level or other taxes like payroll taxes at the federal level. So that's one thing we do in tax basics. Other things include simple questions that are hard to find. You know, how much are Supreme Court justices paid? Does the First Lady have a budget, and does she get a pension like the president when the president retires? Those are often common questions. Many times you see on Snopes people having to debunk a whole lot of internet garbage about fiscal policy. We try to do our share of that ourselves, and we do it from a fiscally conservative lens. No apologies there. But it's based on data, not opinion.
So you're like the Snopes for tax information.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. I'm sure there are others who can fill that role.
Well, you also have something called the Taxpayer Defense Center. What is that?
Yeah, that's a prime example of what I was talking about earlier, of identifying something in our movement that wasn't being done and doing it. The Taxpayer Defense Center is a public interest litigation arm that's looking for precedential cases that can move the needle on taxpayer rights, on retroactivity of taxes, on interstate taxation, all of these tax fairness issues that no one at the state level seems to want to litigate in our movement. No one at the federal level has yet to handle, and the private sector doesn't even want to handle. I mean, a public interest litigation arm does a unique thing in that our purpose is to win rulings that will benefit all taxpayers. A private law firm's interest is to get the best ruling for their client. I mean, that's not bad or selfish. It's just a different motivation.
That's their business, right?
Right. And so we said, well, our business should be, how about we figure out ways that we can win court rulings that will establish precedents that other taxpayers can use, not just the immediate taxpayer at issue.
Pete, are there some interesting tax things happening because of the pandemic? Like, I'll tell you, at my company, for example, at Matrix Group, I've got more people in more states around the country. And because they're employees, it's kind of a nightmare for my company because we're in like 10 states.
Yeah. And that is becoming an increasing concern. Telework is still not an activity that government tax administrators have properly caught up with. By that, I mean they tend to graft old tax laws and old ways of thinking about how to administer them on remote work and telework. And that's why, for example, our foundation came up with something called the Rome Index, Remote Obligations and Mobility Index. It's designed to show which states have the best laws in terms of simplicity, in terms of ease of administration, in terms of ease of compliance for remote work and commuting. And what that's doing is sparking a conversation among a number of state legislatures in thinking, how can we do this better? We could keep just trying to chase every single dollar from remote workers and grab them for ourselves rather than the other state where they're residing, and the same conversations going in that other state.
Right, right.
Or we can figure out equitable ways of administering people and their activities between two states so that everybody benefits. And we're seeing that opening up now in places like Arkansas and elsewhere where they are considering reforms to their laws that will benefit taxpayers as well as revenue collectors, to be honest.
Interesting. Well, Pete, before we go, the big, beautiful bill passed. Is your job done for the year?
Oh, yeah, sure. I can just go on vacation. No, afraid not. I mean, besides the fact that there will be another bill coming out soon, through what's called the reconciliation process. We're hoping it'll be a good bill.
Right.
We're working with House leadership to get a bill out there that addresses some of the things that the One Big Beautiful bill did not. And job one is getting a handle on federal spending growth and debt. We are going to have to do a better job of that. That is the single biggest challenge facing the United States on the fiscal policy front today, is how to restrain the debt trajectory that we're on. Just servicing our national debt now costs more than the entire national defense budget. That's not sustainable. And so I'm hopeful that Reconciliation 2.0, as they're going to call it, we'll have some good provisions there. We have a major sixth IRS reform package brewing in the Senate Finance Committee coming up this fall. We have several cases on our docket through Taxpayer Defense Center and a ton of work at the state level.
Wow, Pete, you got your hands full. We will put a link in the show notes to your website, as well as to your tax basics and any other resources that you want to put in the show notes. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.